Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, we'll talk about the best organic gardening methods on How Homeopathy Helps to Grow Great Gardens, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck and international expert agro-homeopath Kavi Raj. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. I'm hoping to speak with my regular co-host, Kavi Raj, if he is able to sign in today. Seems to be having some technical difficulties. Okay, it looks like he has gotten in. Whoa. Okay, so Kavi Raj is the author of the international best-selling book, Homeopathy for Farm and Garden. It has been translated into 7 languages. And if Dr. Robert Bruck from North Carolina State University is able to call in today, we will open the line for him. He is a professor of environmental science and technology and a plant pathologist, also a very knowledgeable and expert in global warming. So today is March 23rd, 2011. You're listening to show number 21 of How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. Last show, last week, we took a detour from our regular gardening in order to talk about radiation toxicity and what was going on in the world dealing with Japan, earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear plants, and emission of steam. And I want to give you a little bit of background about our shows also. On Monday, we study the organon with me. And also, I talk about what's going on. It looks like Kavi Raj has lost his sound again, so he can't hear. And I'm trying to let him know what to try to do. So what we've got going is Monday is Study the Organon and Health News. And Wednesday is today, Organic Gardening. Thursday, Vaccinations and Your Rights with Alan Phillips. And on Sunday, I do a lovely relaxation midnight meditation. The quote for today, we might have a couple of quotes on bees. Bless the flowers and the weeds, my birds and bees. And I don't have an author for that, so I don't know whether it's anonymous. And also, no bees, no honey, no work, no money. And therefore, that is a proverb, and we're going to be learning more about bees and what happens when they're... Oops, something is coming on for some reason. No bees and no honey, because if we don't have the bees, we're going to have a great loss to our agriculture, to the products that we have available to us, whether they're food or clothing or other types of products. And also the rest of the quote, proverb, no work, no money. Therefore, it is a huge industry, but it is really a necessity for our earth. And one more quote about the bees. When you go in search of honey, you must expect to be stung by bees. That is Joseph Hubert, a French essayist and moralist who lived in 1754 to 1824, just about the time of Samuel Hahnemann himself. And as I mentioned last week, we did have a special show due to the disasters where all eyes were turned toward Japan, and we do not want to remove our gaze from that area of the world and keep a good close watch on what is happening and know what precautions to take, because I just read this morning that there was a cloud that was moving toward France. And right now they say that not to be worried, but I think all precautions should be taken to secure the people's health over there. And we also need to continue with our assistance in the recovery efforts and watching the radioactive contamination of plants, water, air, and our earth, and what we can do to lessen the deterioration of all of those parts of our world. I was also wondering why the spinach plant in particular was so affected. You might have heard reports that they have detected high levels of contamination, radioactive contamination on the spinach plants. And Dr. Brock told me that the spinach plant has a large, massy leaf surface where the radioactive dust can fall and be captured. Therefore, it can intake and absorb a lot of the radioactivity. Today, we will be talking about the bees. And let me move over to that. We're going to be talking about different aspects of the bees and what kinds of actions we can take in the loss of that entire population of insect. Also, I have notes somewhere, but it's about the March on Washington, which is coming up right away, Millions Against Monsanto, March 26th, and consumers deserve a choice of whether or not to purchase genetically modified food. So if you are able, please join that effort. And I've opened the line to Kavi, and I want to welcome him. So glad that you're able to join today.
Yeah, finally. Yeah,
yeah, it feels like it's been a month with all your travels.
Yeah. Well, speaking about bees, Einstein, he once said, if the bee disappeared off the surface of the globe, then man would only have 4 years of life left. No more bees, no more pollination, no more plants, no more animals, no more man. That is a bit a pessimist look, because there are many plants that we eat that are pollinated by wind. And so we would still have grains, for instance. But, you know, as the Bible says, man shall not live of bread alone.
Yeah.
So we need many other things. And if we look at what the bees are supplying to us, they pollinate almonds, apples, apricots, avocados, beets, blueberries, broccoli, cabbage, carrots, cashew nuts, celery, cherries, coconuts, cotton, cucumber, grapes, lemons, limes, mangoes, onions, papaya, pears, soybeans, strawberries, and watermelon.
That's a huge list.
And that's only a small list of what they all pollinate.
I have a question about that. If the bees were not there, would those vegetables and fruits be pollinated?
Yes, because there are also, of course, butterflies and other pollinating insects, but the pollination would be a lot less, and there would be severe dents in the production. I would say that if the bees disappear, then 70% of our food production, we can say goodbye instantly.
Right. And yeah. So do we have a problem right now with food production? Do we have enough food being produced to feed the world?
Yes, there is plenty of food, but it is the distribution that is actually completely out of kilter.
Okay.
Yeah, if we consider that, for instance, here in the West we eat a lot of meat. It takes 16 kilos of grains and pulses to produce 1 kilo of meat. So it is a very inefficient and uneconomical way of producing our food. If instead of all these animals that we feed all these grains, if we would use the land for grains and pulses for people, and not feed them to the animals and start eating a vegetarian diet, we could instantly feed another 5 billion people on this planet. Mm-hmm. But we kill 700 billion animals every year for food.
700 billion?
700 billion. That is including, of course, fish and chicken and, you know, poultry and all that stuff. But 700 billion animals are killed each year for food worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so now imagine that if we would not have these 700 billion animals to feed all the grains and all the things that we should eat, then we could easily feed twice as many people. And also, if we would all go to organic growing says even the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, says organic agriculture could feed the whole world with ease.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it is not a matter of needing all these GMOs ostensibly to feed the world. But if we see the results in all these different countries, then we see that the production of GMOs is always below par, and it's always a lot less than what they have promised. And it brings a whole host of other problems. And that is, one thing is these insecticides that kill the bees. Not so long ago, the EPA in the United States approved a neonicotinoid, which is the latest brand of insecticides. Although the EPA scientists said, "Don't release this, because if you release this, all the bees will die."
Really?
And about 5-6 years ago, they approved it, and in 2006, the colony collapsed. Disorder really started to take off, and that was only a year and a half after this pesticide had been approved. And before that, yeah, bees would also die. You know, high power lines have an influence. If a beehive is near a high power line, then their homing in to the hive is being disrupted. So when they leave, they can't come back. They can't find a way back. And there are other influences, of course, yeah. But the biggest one is the neonicotinoids. And ever since that happened, colony collapse disorder has boomed all over the world.
How much of this? It's an insecticide, neonicotinoid. But say that again.
Yeah, neonicotinoids are the latest class of pesticides, because they're more powerful than anything they had before, because all the insects have become resistant. And so they said, okay, we'll release it anyway. And then one beekeeper, he was asking the EPA about this pesticide, and then he got the whole kit and caboodle from the EPA, including the reports of the scientists who said, don't release this because it will kill the bees. And so now the beekeepers, they are organizing to sue the EPA for loss of income and loss of bees and this and that. Because what happens with the neonicotinoids, the gut of the bee gets completely affected and almost dissolved. If you look at a photo of a bee in the healthy state, you cannot even see its intestinal tract. But if you take a photo of a bee that has been affected, you can see the intestinal tract, and it's all green and blue inside, and it's rotting away. And so the bees then massively, all the workers, they just leave the nest and they don't come back, because they want to protect the hive, so they don't want to come back. Yeah. But meanwhile, the hive dies out because there's no longer any workers. Yeah, so it is the bees commit mass suicide to protect the hive, which can no longer be protected because there ain't no workers. And so all the larvae, they don't come out, they don't get fed, and so goodbye to the beehive.
And this is what they've determined now, and all of the other potential reasons, which they had numerous reasons over
many years,
about the mites,
yeah, The mite is also a problem, but it's a minor problem compared to colony collapse disorder, because with colony collapse disorder, all the bees just disappear. And with the mites, they keep returning. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So the mite can devastate a bee population and kill off a whole bunch. But the bees will survive. But with colony collapse disorder, nothing survives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So the mite is kind of under control. I think
not really under control, but it is a secondary problem compared to colony collapse disorder.
Okay. Well, I guess if they were weakened by one, then the second one could. Be less hardy.
Yeah, they would be more susceptible to the second, of course. But we see, that if we look at the different things, people say GMOs and GE, genetically engineered products, they are one of the main dangers in this phenomena. But the funny thing is that the GMOs are nearly all grains, and grains are not pollinated by bees. So the GMO has no direct influence, except maybe with cotton, yeah,
mm-hmm.
and because cotton is pollinated by bees, yeah, and there are
and that would
apple.
Be a huge that would be a huge loss if
yes.
there were. The cotton crops is...
Yes, because, then what are we going to wear? Yeah.
Well, synthetic or... What, does it affect flax and other linens?
Not as far as I know, but I've just given you a small list. I don't know by heart if flax is wind or insect pollinated. I would have mm-hmm. to look that up.
Okay,
yeah.
A research project.
Yes, and the honeybees are in danger because industrial pesticide-dependent agriculture in the United States and everywhere else is creating a death trap for the honeybee and threatening the human and bee symbiotic relationship. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
There was one professor. Evangelos Falianatos, who was teaching at Humboldt State University in California 20 years ago, he invited a beekeeper to talk to the students. And the beekeeper said each time he took his bees to Southern California to pollinate other farmers' crops, he would lose a third of his bees to sprays. And that was in 2009. In 2006, mm-hmm. And in 2009, the losses ranges all the way to 60%. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Honeybees have been in terrible straits, and I'll tell you a little history to explain this tragedy. Yeah? Flowers flower for several days, and the foraging bee, if alive after its visit to the beautiful white flowers of almonds, for example, laden with invisible spheres of asphyxiating gas, will be bringing this back to its home pollen and the nectar mixed with parathion. Parathion is one of the things they used to use. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is possible that the nectar which the bee makes into honey and the pollen may end up in some food store to be bought and eaten by humans. Yeah, and so the beekeepers know what is happening to their bees, including the potential that the honey may not even be fit for human consumption. Yeah.
I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, so...
Yes.
So we don't know even if, honey has always been a valuable commodity and a healing food.
Yes.
Nutritional source, and we could even apply it to the skin for burns and other things. And if it's contaminated by, you're saying, these chemicals, is that
yes.
Then what would it be doing?
In 1974... Yeah. In 1974, the EPA licensed the nerve gas parathion, which
mm-hmm.
is trapped in nylon bubbles the size of pollen particles. Yeah, and what makes mm-hmm. this more dangerous to bees, yeah, is the very technology of time-release microcapsule. And this acutely toxic insecticide born of chemical warfare would be on the surface of the flowers. And so then the bees take it and bring it to the hive, and there only is this gas released. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And many beekeepers don't throw away the honey and the pollen and the wax of colonies destroyed by encapsulated parathion or other poisons. They just melt the wax for new combs, and they sell both the honey and the pollen to the public. And the government regulators knew about this danger. Yeah, Carl Johansson, professor of entomology at Washington State University in Pullman, Washington, he called this microencapsulated methyl parathion the most destructive bee poisoning insecticide ever developed. And in 1976, the USDA published a report by one of its former employees, Mr. McGregor, who was a honeybee expert, who documented that about a third of what we eat benefits from honeybee pollination. And that includes vegetables, oil seeds, and domesticated animals eating bee-pollinated hay. Although most hay is not so much bee-pollinated. In 2007, the value of food dependent on honeybees was $15 billion in the United States alone. Yeah. So McGregor
also how do you spell that particular parathion? How do you spell
parathion,
that?
Parathion. Parathion is P-A-R-A. T-H-I-O-N.
Okay, I guess in over here, I think I may have heard it said parathion.
Ah, yeah.
Okay, so this is the major problem.
Yeah, that's what Mr. McGregor says. But now we have these neonicotinoids, which are even worse. Yeah, this is from the 70s. Mr. McGregor pointed out that insect pollinated legumes collect nitrogen, storing it in the roots and enriching the soil.
Okay.
But insect pollination makes the crops more wholesome and abundant. So he said to the farmer, he should never forget that no cultural practice will cause a fruit to set if the pollination is neglected. Yeah. Pesticides are like dope drugs. The more they are used, the more powerful the next one must be to give satisfaction. And therein develops the spiraling effect, the pesticide treadmill. And the chemical salesman, in pressuring the grower to use his product, practically assumes the role of the dope pusher. And once the victim, the grower, is hooked, he becomes a steady and ever-increasing user. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And no government agency ever listened.
Was this stated by Mr. McGregor also?
Yeah.
Yes, he's still talking. Okay.
Yeah, and so no government agency ever listened to Mr. McGregor. Yeah, and the result is now that the honeybees and other pollinators are moving towards extinction. Yeah. In 2006, the U.S. National Research Council already warned of the demonstrably downward trends in the population of pollinators. And for the first time since 1922, American farmers are renting imported bees for their crops. And they're even buying bees from Australia. Yeah.
I thought we were exporting ours overseas. Or
no,
we're importing
you don't.
Them.
Oh. You don't anymore.
Wow.
Honeybees, the National Academy's report said, pollinate more than 90 crops in the United States, but have declined by 30% in the last 20 years alone. And the scientist who wrote that report expressed alarm at the precipitous decline of the pollinators. But this makes no difference to the EPA, which failed to ban the microencapsulated parathion, and which failed to stop the approval of the neonicotinoids. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so bee experts know that insecticides cause brain damage to the bees, disorienting them and making it impossible for them to find a way home. Yeah, and that is the consequence of decades of agribusiness warfare against nature. Yeah, and in time, therefore, also the honeybee. And in addition, beekeepers struck billions of bees all over the country for pollination, depriving them of good food, stressing them enormously, and very possibly injuring their health. Yeah. And the EPA and the USDA approved the latest pesticide from Bayer. Yeah, Bayer is the producer of that neonicotinoid. And the scientists at the USDA and the EPA warned that this pesticide would cause massive bee death, but they were ignored, mm-hmm. and the pesticide was approved anyway. And so the spate in CCD is mainly caused by this pesticide at the moment, and the solution is to use nicotinum in potency as the closest
to that's our
millimeter.
Solution?
That's
our
solution. And tobacco could also be used because it also contains nicotine. And in Canada, uh-huh. some beekeepers are already testing it for me, and I'm waiting for the results.
Wonderful. Okay,
yeah.
Well, that's really great. Just the way that we're saying the radioactive elements can be used to alleviate the symptoms from radiation toxicity and sickness. So, too, if the bees are having this collapse syndrome from the nicotinoids and those chemicals, the one from Bayer, the parathion, that similar homeopathic drugs could alleviate the problems and maybe let the bee colonies come back.
Yes. And in Nature, you know, the magazine Nature?
Yes.
Yeah, they have published a full episode of a movie called Silence of the Bees. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in the winter of 2006, a strange phenomenon fell upon the honeybees' hives across the country. Without a trace, millions of bees vanished from their hives. A precious pollinator of fruits and vegetables, the disappearing bees left billions of dollars of crop at risk and threatened the food supply. And the epidemic said the research is scrambling to discover why honeybees were dying in record numbers and to stop the epidemic in the tracks before it spreads further. And this movie is the first in-depth look at the research to uncover what's killing the honeybee.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, since Nature is financed by pharmaceutical and agricultural interests, they will say something about this, but they will not blame it. They will blame something else. Yeah. And because here we have a comment and somebody says, well, I've seen Silence of the Bees twice and realized that our genetically re-engineered foods were not mentioned at all. Well, they were not mentioned because most of them are grains, but the cotton is also not mentioned, and the eggplant is not mentioned, and they are not grains, and they need the bees as pollinators. And there you see, because they don't mention the GMOs, that, you know, there is not really a full investigation going on. There is an investigation going on to blame something else. It is a setup. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're saying the EPA knows stuff, and
yes, they're not forthcoming because the EPA has approved the pesticide, and you are of course not going to cut yourself in the fingers. And the EPA and the USDA are financed by the agribiz. Yeah, so they are not going to bite the hand that feeds them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anything that is coming out of those quarters should be taken with a pinch of salt. We should look at independent investigators, and independent investigators are very hard to find. And if they say something, they run the risk of ruining their own career. As we have seen, for instance, with Benveniste and with Montagnier, yeah. As soon as they say something that goes against the grain, then they are being chased away.
Yeah.
So
nobody's
gonna really open up his mouth for fear of losing his job. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, We have to really look at what has been happening, and that beekeeper who got these papers from the EPA, where they admit that we just approved it anyway because, you know, we're not going to listen to our scientists who say that this is dangerous. Yeah, we approve it anyway because otherwise, you know, we are in trouble with the industry. Yeah. And since the industry is always a revolving door, you know, the industry makes a product like they did with Monsanto. Monsanto made a product, and they wanted to have USDA approval. So they waited 2 years, and then they put one of their people into the USDA, who then approved his own product, as being somebody who works for the USDA. And so he approved the product that he had helped develop himself. Yeah. Then later, he went into politics, and then got on the team of some lawmaker and persuaded the lawmaker to make the use of his product compulsory. Mm-hmm. And then went back to Monsanto. Yeah. So there is this revolving door. They move people around, yeah, to first to develop something, then to approve it, and then if they can, by law, make it compulsory.
So after listening to all of the situation that you've described and the infiltration of these pesticides and insecticides that are wreaking havoc and harm to the bee populations, and the fact that there are other things that are involved as well, considering the varroa mite and the telephone masks and the climate change and all the many, many factors that are involved. Do we have a hopeful outlook to what our future looks like with saving the bee population and maybe getting rid of the neonicotinoids and the other harmful that's causing so much stress in the population?
Yes, I would say that we do, because if we look at what happened in the 90s in California, the consumer stood up and took the pesticide manufacturers to court, and had 200 pesticides banned in one go, boom, yeah, mm-hmm. in California. So it can happen, but the first thing that is needed is a great awareness campaign to the consumer. The second thing that is needed is that we must organize as consumers and demand retribution and withdrawal of these pesticides. And the third thing that urgently needs to happen is that we shall have to go in there with homeopathy and save the bees, because if we don't, then I give it 10-15 years, and then we will have severe famines all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then we will get food riots, and we will get this, that, and the other. But as we know from disaster capitalism, disaster capitalism thrives on these kinds of crises and wars and natural catastrophes, because it enables them to implement everything, because they are organized, and the people who are the subject to this devastation, they cannot organize, because they are just groping and trying to put their lives back into order. Yeah, so for the big corporations, this is like a godsend, because now they can say, oh, okay, we have to implement this and we have to implement that. Yeah, and it is a bit austere, but, you know, afterwards it will be okay. And then they forget to say that it's only for them that it will be okay, and that the rest of us can go to hell as far as they're concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have to organize as consumers, yeah, and we have to simply, you know, massively demand to a full 100% moratorium on these dangerous pesticides like parathion and the neonicotinoids, because they will they will create huge problems in the near future if we don't stop it now. If we stop it now, we have a better chance. If we don't stop it now, it will only be more difficult.
Well, maybe more of these group efforts will be collaborations like the Millions Against Monsanto March,
yes,
which is going to be in Washington, D.C. on March 26,
yeah,
which is only 3 days away.
Yes.
That we don't even know all the time what is labeled. We don't know what we're eating.
No.
And would the march on Washington for the against the GMOs, that is specific to the genetically modified.
Yes, but it tells the big corporations that, hey guys, you know, you better wake up to reality because we are not going to take it. And if we can do that with the GMOs, we can do it for the bees. Yeah.
Right.
And
so,
if we can do it for the bees, we can do it for everything else as well. We can do it for the pesticides, we can do it for the herbicides, we can do it for the fungicides. We should finally get rid of this stuff and implement the homeopathic remedies because they cost nothing. Yeah. They are efficacious and they are clean. Yeah. They don't cost the earth. They use very little resources, of which we already have a shortage in many areas. So actually, you know, if we had some intelligent people in the government, which I doubt, yeah, then we could have a good chance of changing these things. Yeah, but
I have
As long as we have corporations financing the politicians, nothing is going to change unless it comes from the people.
I have a question regarding other modes of care for the bees that can be implemented besides reduction in insecticide and pesticide use that could help support the bee population. Just the way when we talk about the radiation problem, we have many things like the chelation and the use of potassium iodine and just simply washing things,
yeah,
other kinds of and foods that we can eat, other kinds of things that we can do to protect ourselves against this kind of contamination. Now, what can we do if, let's say, you're just a small a farmer taking care of your personal hives.
Yeah.
What can that person do in their region, in their just small locale to protect their bees?
Well, first of all, don't move them around. Leave the hive where it sits. Yeah. And make sure that your neighboring farmers are not using those pesticides. And say, hey, guys, you know, if you want clean honey, you better make sure that you don't put any pesticide there because otherwise your honey is going to be contaminated. Yeah? So, you know, you're cutting yourself and everybody else in the fingers that way. And the local beekeeper can make his community in which he lives, he can make them aware of what is happening. And the community can demand from the farmers who are part of the community, hey, guys, you know, wake up. Don't use these pesticides. If they say, what else can we use? Well, in every community, we should actually have somebody who at least knows about this homeopathy for plants. Yeah. And, of course, with the radiation from a telephone mast, well, if your beehives need a telephone mast, move it. Yeah. And make sure that something is in between so that the radiation does not penetrate so easily. Yeah. And
so on the one hand, you say don't move your beehives around, and then on the other hand,
yeah, only if you are right next to a mast, of course, then you have to move your beehive. But otherwise, don't move your beehive. Don't take it, cart it all over the country.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
And put your bees under stress.
Keep
them in place. And if everybody would do that, you know. They've also noticed, for instance, the bumblebee is rapidly disappearing. Yeah.
Really?
And Yeah, the bumblebee is also a pollinator, only the bumblebee doesn't live in hives and doesn't give us honey, so people never paid much attention to that. But the bumblebee is also rapidly disappearing. So are some species of butterfly. Yeah, they are disappearing. Why? Because they are also, you know, feeding on this poisonous stuff. I have seen not so long ago. I saw. I have tried to find it again, but I haven't found it yet. There is a little movie of a bee going into a flower, and it's the flower of a GMO crop, and the bee goes in there. Yeah, and has a taste and immediately comes out and tries to rub all that stuff off its body and is basically panicking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then flies back to the hive and makes sure that the other bees don't go there. Don't go there because that stuff is poisonous and the bee knows the difference.
But they're not able to are they truly able to communicate?
Of course they are able to communicate. They can tell each other where to go, so they can also tell each other where not to go. Yeah, they do that in this bee dance, you know. And people have been studying this for a long time and then see in which direction goes the bees go off. And so they can interpret that a particular dance is in that direction, yeah, and if he does so many movements, it is so far away, and if he does more movement, it is further away, and if he does less, it is closer by. So all these things, they have already been discovered. So if the bee can tell his mates where to go, the bee can also tell his mates where not to go. I am quite sure about that, yeah. Because, you know, we all think in our arrogance that we are the only one with brains and that we are the only ones who can properly communicate, but we find out that the insects also do so. And we find out that...
So what are the other things that we can do to keep stress? Obviously, it's stress that is harming the bees, just like stress is harming humans.
Of course.
What are the other kinds of stress?
Make sure that you leave sufficient honey in the hive so the bees have something for the winter. Don't take all the honey. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take, you know, many beekeepers take all the honey and then give them white sugar. Well, no wonder that the bees are weak, because that is not bee food. Bee food is something different. Yeah. So I would say if you replace it with anything, give them molasses, at least that is wholesome. Yeah. And don't take everything. Take 2/3 and leave them at least 1/3. Yeah, because that is what they survive on in the winter. And give them molasses instead of sugar. Yeah?
Okay, so we need
that is one way in which you can reduce. Yeah, you have to reduce the stress. Well, another thing is, as I said, don't move them around. Don't cart them 400 kilometers away because there is a big field with something that they like, yeah. Keep everything as local as possible, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that the consumer becomes aware. When the consumer is aware, only the consumer has the numbers to demand the change, yeah, because the government is not going to do it.
Right.
The government has no interest in doing that, yeah. The government is doing what their paymasters tell them, yeah. Whereas they should actually be working for us. And it's only we as consumers, if we really stand up and be counted, then they are going to listen, because if they don't listen, the next election they will be out on the street. Yeah.
Right. So what we want, we don't want to overstress the bees, because we don't want to make them work harder than they normally can endure with their regular immune system. And so that is why, and I've heard that too, that putting them in trucks and carting them all around is a huge stress on them to go to a new area. And what about water needs? You know, how do we maintain the water needs for the bees? Is that something to be concerned about?
The bees actually go out in the morning and drink the dew from the plants.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, that is where they get their moisture from. Yeah, and for the rest, have you never seen it that when the tap is dripping, that the bees all hang around the tap and drink from the tap?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the bees know where to get water. Yeah.
So you don't have to have a special, you know, provider.
Container of water? No. It's not like your dog.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they need a lot less water than we do. Yeah. And what they also do, as I said, you know, they take it from dripping taps, and they take the dew from the plants in the morning. And you know, if there is any body of water, they will sit on the edge of the water, yeah, where everything is moist, and their tongues are fine enough to pick up the moisture even from the street, yeah. When
mm-hmm.
the street is wet, the bee can drink from it. We cannot because we don't get enough in, but the bee is so much smaller, it can drink from that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if there is sufficient rain, you don't have to worry about it, because every morning there is always enough dew. Yeah, there is so much dew even that if you would set up a tarpaulin of 1 by 1 meters, yeah, and you put it on sticks at the corners, yeah, and then you lay a stone in the middle, yeah, then the tarp would collect on the top of the tarp. It would collect sufficient water for a cup full, and what would drip off at the bottom, yeah, right in the middle underneath where the stone is, you put a cup, and the dew that comes off there is also a cup full. So you have 2 cupfuls of water from a square meter of tarpaulin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that is how much how much dew there is every day.
So this is not a really huge concern. My worry was whether the water was clean enough for them and would be added stress.
Well, nowadays I don't think we can speak about clean rain unless you live very far away from all industry and there is no radioactive cloud going overhead. Yeah, but for the mm-hmm. rest, rain I don't think it's very clean nowadays.
Therefore, we have really no control over it, and we just must accept what is there.
Yeah, we must accept mm-hmm. what is there. It's been, mm-hmm. you know, it's been how long? About 100 years now that we have been using pesticides, yeah? And, mm-hmm. A bit less maybe, 70 years. In the 1930s, they really started it, yeah? So in those 70 years we have put so many substances in the water, also in the forms of medicines, yeah, that for instance it can no longer be filtered out. You find pesticides in your tap water, you find hormones in your tap water, you find antibiotics in there, you find Vioxx, you find Viagra, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is, people are on psychiatric drugs. Did you know 60% of adults in the United States are on psychiatric drugs? And that the water supply... Yes, of adults. Yeah.
Oh.
And that the water supplies of all the big cities have all these substances in the drinking water because they can't be filtered out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they distill water, you know, even when you distill water, it comes along. And because it is so volatile, it goes up with the water. So to get really clean water is practically impossible now.
Therefore, we
yeah.
just have to look toward the future. And with the knowledge about what we're contaminating our waterways, we need to try and clean that up as a whole.
Yes.
But otherwise, there's really nothing special to provide for the bee population specifically. What about caring for the queen bee? That is a special need to keep a hive alive.
Yes, but that is actually what the bees do. We should not interfere there. Yeah, the bees
mm-hmm.
know perfectly well how to do that. They've been doing it for millions of years. We can leave it in their hands to take care of the queens.
Okay.
Yeah, but when you get things like varroa mite in there, of course you will have to treat the hive. Yeah, Now, what I've been doing and proposing is, okay, use any predatory mite, that is itself a predator of any other mite, and
mm-hmm.
use that in potency and nebulize that into the hive, and then the Varroa mite will get the pheromone of its own enemy and will rapidly disappear because they don't want to be eaten. Yeah, so it is a matter of, hey, if you don't go, I bring my big brother. Yeah, that kind of attitude. Yeah.
Have you been doing some of these research projects then with the predatory mite?
I have proposed this to some beekeepers, and the mm-hmm. predatory mite can be bought from the IPM companies. And I said to them, if need be, I will make the remedy. You know, but beekeepers are a bit like farmers. We have a saying in Dutch: that which the farmer doesn't know, he will not eat. Yeah, they are a conservative lot, and to convince them to change something is very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're having a difficult time then finding beekeepers,
who are willing to do that. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we have John Board's brother in Canada. He is willing to do it. Yeah. But he is only mm-hmm. willing to do it after he had the experience on himself. Yeah. Because he was always coughing, and so I gave him a remedy, and his cough stopped, you know, and he hasn't had it back since. Yeah, so now he
mm-hmm.
says, oh, wait a minute, this guy really knows what he's doing. I better listen.
Well, I hope we hear some more good news about the outcome. And when you do some kind of a homeopathic research project on the life of bees, what is the cycle of the bee in terms of life cycle and when you would expect to see some kind of an improvement?
Well, the life cycle of the bee, they are constantly dying off and being replenished. Yeah, that's why the pupating process is a constant process, and that's why they make their comb bigger and bigger to have new offspring. Yeah, some of which becomes workers. Yeah, and honey collectors. Some of which are only there to fertilize the queen. Yeah, they do nothing else, because the queen can lay up to 1,000 eggs every day. Yeah.
Every
yeah.
day.
Yeah, if she is really, you know, if she in a good hive, yeah, gets all the best stuff and doesn't get under stress. And then, yeah, she can lay 1,000 eggs every day, as far as I know from the literature. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So a good big bee colony is at least 100,000. Yeah, but there are bee colonies that are so big that they consist of 500,000 inhabitants. Yeah, so. You know, there is constant birth and death is going on all the time there. So it is not that like with the animals in spring there will be more than and then
so
every
saying,
so many months. It is an ongoing process, except in
okay.
the winter it slows down.
Okay. So in terms of doing research projects where you would expect to see some type of improvement within the time span that bees have these birthing process and then dying
yeah.
off, how are you going to be able to measure?
You're going to be able to measure by the amount of varroa mites that drop out of the bottom, because you see in the bottom of most hives they have a little tray, yeah, and in the tray you can see, you know, the dead and the reasons why they are dead. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you can pick them out and you can look at them and you can say, okay, this one was killed by the mites. This one was killed from old age. And this one was killed from some poison, because you can see it in the changes that happen in the bee. Yeah. And so that is how they keep an eye on the health of the hive. And then if there is droppings from, you know, because there's also a moth, the codling moth.
Yeah. How do you spell that?
C-O-D-L-I-N-G, codling, codling moth, which
okay.
is a, which is a problem in beehives because they go in there and they eat all kinds of things and the bees are too small to fight them off, yeah, but these animals, they also have droppings, and the droppings will be in the bottom tray. So if you investigate your bottom tray one, two times a week, then you can see, oh, now I got this this moth in there. Oh,
okay.
Now I got varroa mite in there. Oh, so many of my bees are dying. Why is that? Yeah. And so then they take the bee, and, you know, they have a loop, and with the loop you can already see a whole lot, and if they're still in doubt, they send off the dead bees to a laboratory and have them investigated. Yeah. And so that's how they find out what is happening.
So you said that you're going to hopefully do some experiments with the varroa mite. And what about the codling moth? Is there a homeopathic approach to dealing with that?
Well, there are most of the beekeepers use what they call rolls, and they put sugar and other things in there. Yeah, and these rolls are eaten by the codling moth, and they put a poison in there, so the codling moth dies. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That is the most primitive way. And of course, the codling moth also has a predator. So I would nebulize the predator of the codling moth in there. Because
okay.
that's how nature would also solve the problem.
So it's actually any beekeepers who are listening and they are interested in participating in some type of experiments using homeopathic remedies, which are totally energetic, and they're not going to have any kind of a side effect or detriment to any other of your organisms on your farm, then
yeah.
they should contact you because you would set up some sort of a trial for
yes.
both the varroa mite or the codling moth. Do you have
yes.
further research with the codling moth?
Well, I have the research that has been done over the years by many different beekeepers, of course. I can have a quick look at that. I have that here quite handy. Just a moment.
And the other thing that we didn't really talk about, I would imagine that bees might have heat stress, and so that would be another factor that the caretaker of the bees would have to keep the temperature cool enough.
That's actually what the bees do themselves. They sit in the
okay.
front of the hive
and
they're fanning all the cool air inside.
Okay.
Yeah, the bees are quite capable of that. And, of course, you don't put your hive in the full sun because the bees also don't put their hive in the full sun. Yeah,
that
so
makes
you
sense.
You keep it in the shade. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
So the beekeeper doesn't really deal with the temperature. They just make sure that they locate their hives in a proper
place. Yes.
Okay.
Now let me have a look at what we know about pests and diseases because
we only
have
one minute left. You want to save this for another time?
Well,
why don't we just wrap up and tell everyone that we've appreciated, Kavi, I really appreciate that you have spent time with me today to talk about the bees, that people need to be aware, they need to take action, tell the neighbor that these pesticides are what the problem is, and that just keep your eyes and ears open to what's going on in your environment and talk to others. So we're out of time, and I want to thank you one more time today, and we'll see you next Wednesday. Bye-bye, everyone.
And then we'll talk a bit more about bees.
Great.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Thank you for listening to How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens with co-hosts Kaviraj Vaikuthanath and Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to get some sunshine and light up your life in your garden.